Good morning. Again, my name is Lainey Breckman, and today we're going to talk a little bit about some Arkansas-based tobacco cessation efforts that were statewide for the past 3 years in Arkansas. I'd first like to recognize a couple of important folks in the room to our program. Dr. Christine Sheffer, who is here, is the principal investigator of our cessation programs at the College of Public Health, and Dr. John Wayne, who is also here, is an important program consultant for us. So for the purposes of the presentation today, I intend to provide a little bit of information about our program and its structure, what our intervention was like, what the criteria we used for the evaluation was and what those results are, and hopefully have a little bit of time for discussions and some conclusions that we feel comfortable drawing from that information. So we know that tobacco treatment or cessation treatment is one of the most cost-effective components of comprehensive tobacco control. In fact, it's a lot more cost-effective than some really common interventions like controlling hypertension or treating high cholesterol, because the benefits when someone quits smoking are immediate and long-lasting health benefits for those individuals. But if someone just tries to quit smoking on their own, or say out of 100 smokers who quit at the end of a 12-month period, really only about 3 to 5% of those folks are still quit. But if we really intensify the intervention with a multi-component cognitive behavioral therapy, particularly when coupled with medications like nicotine replacement or other treatments like Chantix, bupropion, nicotine gum, then those results can actually get a lot closer to 30% at the end of 12 months. But even though we know that these programs can be very effective, they've not traditionally been available in smaller or rural areas and been really situated in larger academic centers that tend to be located in larger metropolitan areas. With a few exceptions like New Jersey, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Ohio has until recently had a program as well. So this is what Arkansas looks like, and it's a pretty small state population-wise. We have fewer than 3 million people in Arkansas, scattered out over about 52,000 square miles, so it's pretty rural place, and we also tend to be one of the more poor states and have a higher smoking rate than some other states. But we wanted to make a high-quality cessation treatment available across the state, and so the first thing we did was really seek out partners who would value those services, would value tobacco cessation, and feel that it enhanced the services that they were already provided. So we looked for some really natural partners, like our area health education centers, local regional hospitals, and health clinics. We did have some trouble finding hosts in some parts of Arkansas, particularly the very rural, very poor Mississippi Delta region, where we ended up locating our services actually in a local workforce center. But because the state was already divvied up into regions with our area health education center system that tended to be located in the population centers of those particular regions, those were our most natural partners and where most of our sites were located. So we wanted to provide some consistency and to have a cost-effective service across the state, and so we wanted to minimize duplication of systems statewide. So some of our activities were conducted locally when others were conducted more centrally in the Little Rock office. So obviously we did local treatment, local face-to-face treatment, and so to do it we found tobacco treatment specialists who were local folks from the area, who knew the area, knew the people who lived there, and provided training for them to implement our intervention. They were responsible for data entry in a local level that was sent through a secure connection to a centrally maintained database in Little Rock, and they also were responsible for most of the patient recruitment activities. Even though those were coordinated centrally, they were conducted on the ground in the local sites. And so that left us in the central office to provide training. Each interventionist was required to attend a 5-day training before they began their work, and then we followed that up with regular conference call trainings as well as some face-to-face booster sessions each year for our staff. We also did the outcome assessment in a centralized way with some specially trained follow-up interviewers who would contact patients post-discharge at 3, 6, and 12 months to figure out how they were doing, if they're how much they were smoking, if they were still smoking, and whether or not they may need to reconnect with those services. And obviously all of our administration and offices of management were located centrally in Little Rock. So our treatment was provided mostly in groups, though individual sessions were available for some of our patients, and we used a 6-session treatment manual. We also had free nicotine patches available to patients who wanted them, but only about 39% of folks actually used the nicotine replacement that we provided. But we did help facilitate access to some other smoking cessation aids like Chantix, bupropion, lozenges, and things like that. So to evaluate the outcomes for effectiveness and cost effectiveness statewide, we organized the sites into 3 different location types using some U.S. Census Bureau definitions. So 4 of our sites were classified as rural incorporated cities, or cities having a population smaller than 100,000 people. 4 sites were then classified as small metropolitan areas with fewer than 400,000 people in their population, and only 2 sites in Arkansas were classified as large metropolitan areas. So then we looked at all the patients treated who were eligible for their 6-month follow-up over the past 3 years. And we had sort of 4 evaluation criteria for these purposes. First, we wanted to look at our outcome assessment response rate, or were we actually able to get a hold of the people who were engaged in our program and then discharged? Were we actually able to get back with them? And we wanted to make sure we had a balanced sample to compare across sites. We looked at our treatment completion rate. Were the patients actually finishing treatment, which we defined as attending 5 of the 6 treatment sessions? And we know that that's a really important thing because there's a clear dose-response relationship with behavioral treatment. So the higher intensity intervention someone receives, the more of it they receive, the more likely they are to be successful in their quit attempt. We looked at our abstinence rate at 6 months, and we calculated that in 2 different ways. Our intention to treat analysis, we included every patient who had been treated and was eligible for follow-up in the denominator. If we weren't able to reach them, then we considered them, we just counted them as a smoker. In our complete case analysis, we only used the folks that we were actually able to get in touch with so that we knew their smoking behaviors or their self-reported smoking behaviors. And finally, we looked at mean cost over the 3 years of what it costs to actually treat a patient in the program. So this is kind of a busy chart, but it sort of breaks down all of those evaluation criteria with the exception of cost, and that's coming up in the next slide. But as you can see, there just really aren't a lot of differences in what we were able to do in our smaller rural areas than what we were able to do in our large areas. Per FTE, we attracted about the same number of patients, about the same proportion of folks, then completed their treatment, and we were able to get in contact with about the same proportion of people across all of the site types over that 3-year period. Our abstinence rates, though, do show a little bit of difference, and I'll tell you about that. As you can see, the quit rates for our intention to treat analysis are a little bit lower than our complete case analysis, as we'd expect, because we've lumped all of those folks we didn't get to talk with into that denominator. And there's not any significant differences, with the exception of the quit rates in our small metropolitan areas that at the intention to treat analysis were significantly lower than the quit rates in large metropolitan areas. And with the complete case analysis, those rates were actually significantly lower than the rural and the large areas. We really think that that has mostly to do with a staffing problem we had at 2 of our smaller sites during year 3, and I'll talk a little bit about that, and those are challenges that any program would experience and really did have an impact on the success of those folks. So this is the cost analysis, and as you can see, the cost is about $500 cheaper to treat someone in our large metropolitan areas than out in the rural sites, but that still wasn't statistically significant. And the mean cost per location per year was around $100,000, with the mean cost for each patient treated being right around $1,000. And these costs include all of our administrative costs, all of our recruitment costs as well, because there wasn't a marketing budget statewide. The funder didn't market this program. Our interventionists spent almost 25% of their time engaged in recruitment activities. And these costs include our data management at the central office, IT development, just sort of everything lumped into those costs. So, we did have some significant challenges that we believe were responsible for creating some lower quit rates. It's hard to find and staff and retain, just like you talked about, the qualified folks in our smaller and rural areas. And what we found is when we do find someone in those smaller areas, often they want to move up to the bigger areas of the state. And so in one site alone, that's a site outside of Little Rock in a pretty small town, we had our interventionist turn over 2 times in the last year alone. And even though we made huge efforts to continue patient treatment, the folks who were still enrolled in the program, we ran a quit line centrally that was phone-based treatment. We made attempts to transfer folks over to those services so that they didn't lose any care, and we sent substitute interventionists down to continue groups that were going on. We still did lose some people, and anytime you have a change up in interventionist, some people just don't do as well. And so we think that's responsible for our lower quit rates in the smaller areas. Managing off-site employees is always a challenge. Our managers were located in the central office and supervised through conference call and quarterly site visits and other reporting mechanisms as we identified them and needed them. You could probably do it a different way. You could have the sites manage the interventionists themselves and have them report to someone else. I think that would create a different set of challenges. It just sort of would depend on where you came down on that and what you wanted to do. And not having a marketing budget does impact a program. A small marketing budget to increase a small increase in the percentage of patients that we were able to attract would really keep that cost down and help to lower the cost per patient treated. And so that would have been a nice thing to have had. So in conclusion, we feel comfortable saying that this sort of broad-based implementation is not only feasible, but it's cost-effective for our rural areas. And that with some structured evaluation and protocols to make sure that training is in place and you have these mechanisms to supervise and support your counselors out in the field, that this really can succeed. In order to keep costs down and minimize duplication of systems, locating things centrally really worked for us and really helps sell this idea to a funder that, you know, yes, it costs about $500 more per patient with a couple of other changes and really minimizing what we're duplicating helps to offset that cost. And with the exception of those quit rates in the small areas, there weren't any significant differences across our large site when we compared them to our rural sites. And so we know that when we disseminate these types of intensive cessation programs statewide or over a large area, that it works. And this should really be an integral part of comprehensive tobacco control. There's our required slide. Thank you.